safe to say this is not the easiest day for the Toronto Blue Jays organization. Of course, you likely know by now that the Blue Jays have severed all ties with the only player in the Hall of Fame wearing a Blue Jays cap, that is Roberto Alomar. They've severed all ties with him as a result of an investigation by Major League Baseball into allegations in 2014 about sexual misconduct. Again, this is not, the ties aren't being severed because of allegations. They are being severed because Major League Baseball has investigated this. Major League Baseball has rendered a decision. They have put Roberto Alomar on the ineligible list. They are severing, or they are removing from Alomar his role as a special consultant for Major League Baseball in Puerto Rico. Alomar's role with the Blue Jays has kind of morphed over the years. He was hired full-time in 2011 by Paul Beeston as a special assistant. And that was, frankly, the timing was frankly the result of the fact that it was Alomar. It was the year that Alomar was expected to go into the Hall of Fame. So the Jays wanted to really welcome him back into the family. Of course, his name and number is up on the level of excellence. There is a banner in center field, which you've seen, the Rogers Center celebrating his induction into the Hall of Fame. Those will be brought down by the organization. In other words, Roberto Alomar's name will be removed from the level of excellence. His banner will be removed from the Rogers Center. There are a lot of other things that have Roberto Alomar's name. As I mentioned, he was hired in 2011 by Paul Beeston, and he has basically been an ever-present. You see him around the press box. You see him at every event. He's been an ambassador for the club, the T12 tournament, which is a very important part. Indeed, it's a signature date in the Canadian baseball calendar. Bore his number, the T12 tournament. He and his father very much involved in that. That is something that will obviously have to be addressed here as we go on. But as of now, or from this point on, the Toronto Blue Jays have severed all ties with Roberto Alomar. And again, this Major League Baseball investigation focused on a complaint or on allegations stemming from an incident in 2014. Kevin Barker alongside Jeff Blair in Baseball Central. Tom Glavine will join us later on in the show. We'll talk about a big series coming up against the Atlanta Braves. It's going to be a great weekend for baseball. Vladdy Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., If only they were playing at the Rogers Center tonight, Mr. Barker. These are two of the very best young players in the game. I mean, Ronald Acuna, pick, is he first, second, third? He's definitely in that conversation. So we'll talk to Tom Glavine about that. But as I mentioned, not an easy day for the Blue Jays, and this is a relationship that has survived. A change in front offices. And as I said, Robbie's role with this organization has, I think it's safe to say, Kevin, it's kind of gradually diminished over the years. And part of that, I think, was by design. Part of it was simply just that, you know, people change and have different priorities in their life. But man, as I said, this is Roberto Alomar is not just a big name in Toronto for the Blue Jays. He's got a real connection across the country.
Yeah.
You know, he connects everything he connects fans, young players to those halcyon days when the Blue Jays were winning World Series.
Yeah, it's a sad day for Robbie Alomar fans. It's a sad day for Blue Jays fans. For me, he is and was the face of the Blue Jays. You know, you thought of the Blue Jays, you thought of Robbie Alomar. And throughout the community and throughout Canada, he represented the Blue Jays, and this is a sad day. I can remember the first time I met him, how giddy I was, how excited I was to meet one of the best players that's ever played in Toronto. And again, this will be interesting to see when we're going to have this conversation with Shai about what it does for the brand of the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Throughout Canada. That'll be the big thing. And who will take over that face of the franchise? It's got to be one. And who is it? Could it be Vladdy? Could it be Bo? Can you even expect them to try and be those? You know, is it an older player? That'll be an interesting thing to see the way the organization handles that part of it.
Yeah, and let's put this in perspective, too. Let's be realistic here for a minute. Roberto Alomar is the only player I can think of. Well, he's certainly the only player who's gone into the Hall of Fame wearing a Blue Jays cap. I don't think there'd be anybody else. Now, did Roy Halladay go in without a logo on his cap? I cannot remember. I should check that. But certainly you can make the case that, if Vladdy Jr. Ends up having a great career or Bo ends up having a great career, you can make the case that they might go in.
Mm-hmm.
But there is nobody else who is going to represent the organization in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there just isn't. And that is, that certainly doesn't take away from the seriousness of this situation, but mm-hmm. I think it's a reminder of Roberto Alomar's, place in the history of this team. And as I said, he was an ever present. You saw him around the press box all the time. He was involved in a lot of fundraising, and this is a difficult day for the organization. It's the right move. I don't think anybody can say otherwise. It's the right move, and it would be the right move even when we weren't in a time where, let's face it, Major League Baseball and a lot of corporations are really under the microscope when it comes to how employees are treated, when it comes to how issues of sexual misconduct are handled. This would be the right move at any time is what I'm saying.
Yep.
And kudos to the Blue Jays for moving as quickly as they did. Let's bring in Shai Davidi, our MLB insider with Sportsnet. So, Shai, if you can, kind of sum it up for us. I've talked about Alomar's name coming down from the level of excellence, et cetera, but he's so much part of the furniture here. Just sort of tell us what the mood is like right now around the Blue Jays.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, he's really interwoven into the fabric of the franchise. And, not only it goes down to, concession stands where, there are menu items with his number and sort of based around him. And, I think the mood is, look, I mean, this was an important moment for them to prove that, all the things that, they talk about culture and inclusivity. I mean, this was a moment where, if you weren't going to act swiftly after Major League Baseball made the decision to put Roberto Alomar on the ineligible list, then, you're not being true to your values. And I think the Blue Jays are living a lot of the things that they've said in terms about trying to create a safe work environment for all their employees, especially their women, making sure that they feel protected and they feel empowered and that they, if something unfortunate happens to them, that they have some recourse and that the organization will stand by their side. I think this was important to show that. And once the decision was made, I think how as an organization can you say that we stand for these values if you leave his name up in the rafters? And so I think that the Blue Jays needed to do the things that they did. This one hurts for a lot of people, but at the same time, I think we have to remember that there's an allegation out there, and there's some things that are more important than what that is, and that is ensuring that anything along these lines is dealt with in a responsible manner, and I think that's what we ended up here.
Yeah, and I think we need to make clear as well, because I know initially some folks in social media said, well, how can they react to allegations? Let's keep in mind that these allegations have been investigated by the commissioner's office and
right.
and by an outside legal firm, I believe they use an outside legal firm. So this isn't Blue Jays trying to get ahead of something. This is an investigation has been done. A result has been rendered, or a judgment, if you want to call it that, has been rendered. Roberto Alomar is clearly within his right to, you know, to pursue this in other avenues. And his statement indicates that he is at least contemplating that. But, you know, Shai, so walk me through what this means. It means the banner in center field, his Hall of Fame banner, comes down, correct?
Yep. And, you know, severing all ties, you know, I think that, you know, all the connections with mm-hmm. him are going to disappear. And, you know, it's actually interesting from a timing perspective, because, you know, next year is going to be the 30th anniversary of the 92 World Series win. And, how do you celebrate that without the home run off Dennis Eckersley, right?
That's, wow. Yes.
You know, one of the most iconic moments in franchise history. And, you know, that's going to be tainted for forever now. And, you know, there's going to have to be some, you know, can there be some separation from art and artist? I think that's certainly something people have to wrap their minds around. But, you know, I do think it's important to remember, and you mentioned this, but there was an investigation conducted by an outside law firm. You know, the findings were presented to Commissioner Rob Manfred. Rob Manfred reviewed those and, you know, realized or came to the conclusion that Major League Baseball policies had been violated here. So there was process. This was not something that was done on a whim. This is not something that was done on feeling. You know, in his statement, when Roberto Alomar says that, you know, he wants an opportunity to counter the accusation. Well, I mean, there was an investigation that would have given him the opportunity to do just that.
Right.
Okay, Shai, the Hall of Fame committee has came out and issued a statement saying that because he was inducted in 2011, you know, they're going to accept and keep his plaque up. Do you think over time they will change their mind about that?
That is going to be really interesting, because, you know, the Hall of Fame has not necessarily been the most sort of helpful or progressive in these kinds of instances. And, you know, I do think that there's a discussion to be had there with the BBWAA. And, you know, I think there's been a lot of rigidity where there's some room for creativity, you know, not just with Roberto Alomar, but with a lot of cases where, you know, if the plaques were more holistic in terms of their examinations of the people they're honoring and included, you know, some of the things, if, you know, Roberto Alomar's plaque was to be updated with what we know now, you know, I think that would certainly be, you know, one way to deal with it without having to sort of turn around the hall and that kind of stuff, but just, you know, make it accurate and reflective of the full story. You know, that could certainly be a way to address it. But, you know, I don't think that this is going to sort of go away quietly. But, you know, I do think that there are a lot of people who have to do a little bit of soul searching right now and try to figure out, you know, what's the right path forward on this.
Yeah. See, I think that's really well said, because I have always had the position that, or always taken the position that, when it comes to the Hall of Fame, there is absolutely nothing wrong, because it's a Hall of Fame and museum, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with being truthful about the future of your game, or I'm sorry, about the past of your game. If you, yeah, it's you know, a Hall of Fame is something to be celebrated, but I think at its core, education is very much a part of the mission statement of the Hall of Fame. And to me, Shai, it has always just made sense to include. I'm not talking about asterisks. I'm just saying there's a notation. There should be a notation or a line added on the plaque. Doesn't take away from what the guy did in the field, but, oh, by the way, the true story includes dot, 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 dot. And that, to me, is the easiest way you get around the whole issue of steroids and everything. And I know we're on the same page in this, I think, in that sometimes you feel like history isn't always good. Quite often it's not good, but damn it, that sometimes that's the stuff you learn from. And that's why I've always felt like you kind of bang your head against here. Just acknowledge people's faults, acknowledge their mistakes, acknowledge any illegality they've done, and let the fan make up his mind as he's standing there reading the plaque or standing there with his daughter reading the plaque. Let them make up their mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's really well said, Jeff. And, you know, there's sort of been this notion that the Hall has to kind of just, you know, whitewash everything, have everything be nice and shiny and happy and sunshine and lollipops. And you know, that's just not the history of sports. That's not humanity for that matter. You know, like if you're going to be a Hall of Fame and museum as it is in the title, then that's got to be, you know, you got to tell the full story. And I know that the counter argument is that, you know, there are displays in the hall that talk about steroids and talk about other issues. But, you know, if you're going to have a place in the Great Hall, you know, the expectation has been that it's, you know, only good things. And there are a lot of people who previously enshrined in the Great Hall who weren't about all good things. And, you know, we're only telling a part of the story there. And, you know, I just think that we're beyond that now. We understand that, you know, the Hall of Fame needs to be a place to celebrate the game, but nothing is perfect. And, you know, understanding or providing the full context of what things were, I think is important, because, you know, otherwise it does feel like you're trying to suppress the seedy underbelly, which exists and we all know about.
Okay, this is a two-part question for me. First one is, does this set back the Jays brand? And number two, do they need to go out and find another Robbie Alomar?
So, I mean, there is no other Robbie Alomar, right? Someone in that moment, I mean, you've got Joe Carter, and Joe Carter's interwoven in the fabric too. And Cito's been interwoven into the fabric. But in terms of someone who is as dynamic and complete a talent as Alomar, you know, perhaps one day down the road, we're talking about, you know, Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the same way, but there's just not. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, Roy Halladay is not with us anymore. And, you know, he certainly would have been a candidate for that. So I just don't know that there's, you know, someone who's quite on that same level. You know, Carlos Delgado is obviously amongst the most meaningful people in franchise history. You know, Jose Bautista has been among the most meaningful people in franchise history. But someone who's has been as all-encompassing and, you know, has tied, you know, his brand and a lot of his work to the Blue Jays and has been just such a presence at such a wide variety of different levels. I'm just not sure that there's a comparable for that right now. And then you asked, you know, does this hurt the Blue Jays brand? You know, I'm not sure that that's fair to the Blue Jays, right? I mean, like this is the actions of one man. The difficulty for them is that this you know, it happened while he was in their employ, and that's not, you know, that's obviously not going to make a lot of people feel good. But, you know, they acted and they did what they did. And, you know, is this the fault of the Blue Jays or is this the fault of the individual? And, you know, I think as much as we sometimes like to blame institutions, we have to ensure that there's enough blame going at the foot of the perpetrators as well.
Shai, really good reporting on this. Thanks so much for joining us as well in a hectic afternoon. You know, we appreciate it.
Thanks, Shai.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Stay well.
Take care. That's Shai Davidi, MLB Insider with SportsCenter. A reminder, we will have Blue Jays baseball tonight. Don't forget, the Joe Panic rule is in effect tonight, right, Bark?
7:37
first pitch. I'm calling it the Joe Panic rule because of that grounder that he lost in the sun. And I mean that with all... Look, I get bugged because people think I have a man crush on Joe Panic. But so it's not... I don't mean that in any way as a negative reflection on it, but I'm going to call it the Joe Panic rule.
Yeah.
So we can say panic time is 7:37.
There you go.
As the Atlanta Braves take on the Blue Jays. We will get you set for that series. Tom Glavine, Hall of Fame pitcher, Atlanta Braves TV analyst. He's a busy man. He's going to try to squeeze in some time for us. We really look forward to that. Love Tom Glavine. Loved watching him pitch and always like his insight on baseball and all things Atlanta Braves. So lots of baseball talk ahead. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We will have more on the Robbie Alomar story as the afternoon goes on. Richard Deitch joins me in Writer's Block. Jeff Passan of ESPN will be along. Stephen Brunt as well. Wrote a book on Roberto Alomar. Stephen Brunt will be along during the 4 o'clock hour of Writer's Block. Reminder, Blue Jays baseball tonight, the Atlanta Braves against the Jays. Drew Smyly on the mound for the Braves. Robbie Ray for the Toronto Blue Jays. According to our Ben Wagner, Teoscar Hernandez will be in the lineup tonight. So he's done all his, he's obviously passed his COVID-19 protocols and has done what he is required to do to get ready. So Teoscar Hernandez comes into the lineup. Kevin Barker, I guess now we'll see. We spent 3 days talking about how the lineup will look when everybody gets back. This will be interesting. You got Drew Smyly. He's a left-hander. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see the maximum right-hand hitting lineup for the Blue Jays today, unless somebody got hurt in the last 24 hours that we don't know about.
Yeah, who do you got your first four guys? Would be Springer, Bichette, Vladdy, Teoscar Hernandez. Then for me, you got Randall Grichuk. I like Marcus Semien because he can hit a heater. And then you got everybody else. Whoever that is, you'd have Kirk, you'd have Lourdes Gurriel Jr., you'd have
I'd go Kirk, Gurriel Jr. and Biggio. That would be my lineup.
That sounds long. That sounds like guys can be themselves. That sounds like guys can go up and hunt the pitch that they can put the best swing on they can possibly put it on. That's what the ultimate goal here is not put guys in positions in an order where they have to go outside the box.
I mean, Drew Smyly is a guy who's been around for a long time, but Bark, I got to think that if you're the Blue Jays, this is, you know, it's not that you're itching. It's not that there's a lineup at the bat rack to take swings against this guy, but I'm sure you'd rather break in against him than, well, you got Charlie Morton on Saturday. Good luck with that. I'm going to go light a candle. And then you got Ian Anderson on Sunday, who, you know, I think is going to be the American League Rookie of the Year. And I think it's just as a couple of years down the road, we're going to talk about this guy as being one of the maybe five best pitchers in the National League. I don't know let me rephrase that. I don't know if his stuff will necessarily hold up to that degree, but those are two tough right-handed pitchers for the Blue Jays to face. So I'm looking forward to seeing that sort of max hitting lineup tonight out there against Drew Smyly.
Yeah, and you got to figure too, Drew Smiley's coming off that arm inflammation, and he's given up 6 homers in 15 innings. He's a two-pitch guy. He throws two pitches 95% of the time. That's a four-seamer and a curve. It's about 93 on the four-seamer and about 79 miles an hour on the curve. With a lineup that likes to guess, you got a 50-50 chance. Flip a coin, go up and look for one, get the foot down early, get the barrel out in front of the plate. What I like is Drew's got to work hard right out the gate. Like there's no off. You know, he's not going to be able to get his feet wet on a first couple of guys now. The first couple of guys are the Blue Jays' best hitters, and that's what you ultimately want to do. And you're not wanting to give the bottom of your order guys to take away at bats from the best hitters in your lineup. That's the ultimate goal here. That's why you're putting your first five best hitters right up front, because you don't want to give the Kirks and the Lourdes Gurriel Juniors now and the Kevin Biggios one more at bat than the other four guys. Just doesn't make any sense. So now you got your best guys, and it'll be nice to see how they attack a guy like this. It's a veteran lineup now, and the veteran lineup's supposed to carry the team. And let's see them do it.
Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Braves, was on leadoff with Ziggy and Scotty Mac this morning. And amongst the topics they discussed, and of course they discussed Ronald Acuna Jr. And I just can't tell you enough about how excited I am to see Ronald Acuna Jr. and Vladdy on the field at the same time. I mean, I think this is going to be so much fun. And, you know, for Vladdy, now Juan Soto didn't play when the Nationals were in. It's pretty clear to me, Bark, that Vladdy's not. I hate saying that guys are on a crusade or guys are on a mission, because you don't know. And Vladdy Guerrero Jr. may just be having a lot of fun and zeroed in right now, and that may be the reason he's hitting. But I've got to think, if Vladdy keeps doing what he's doing, these matchups against guys like Acuna or against a guy like Tatis Jr. or any of these transcendent young players, Lewis Robert with the White Sox, I think it'll be interesting to see if Vladdy rises to the occasion here, because there is still an element of mano a mano. Now, I know it's against the pitcher, right? It's about your Vladdy ain't thinking about Ronald Acuna Jr. when he's standing out in the mound. I hope he isn't when he's at home plate and Charlie Morton is pitching. He's thinking about Charlie Morton. But I think it's going to be interesting to see Vladdy if he can maintain this level of performance against guys that are, for a lot of us, were his cohort.
Yeah.
Now, they're different players, understandably, different physical specimens, all that stuff, different stages of development. But, you know, like Vladdy, they were the top prospect overall. Like Vladdy, when they came into the majors, it was a big deal. Like Vladdy, part of the reason it's a big deal is because they hit home runs. You know, the separator is their, is their, is their defense and their athleticism. But if Vladdy catches up there, like he is going to be, if his career is as good as we think it's going to be and as good as we want it to be, then he has to be in that list. When you say, give me your top five under 25, it's got to be Soto, Tatis, Acuna Jr., Vladdy, and then somebody else.
Yeah, well, the one thing you'd be looking at with Vladdy tonight and in this series is, will he try hard? Baseball players, when they try hard, don't do very well. They grip the bat tighter. You know, they get real stiff at the plate. They expand. They chase pitches. They do all the things trying to keep up with the other guy that's a really, really good player that you're supposed to be like. He's read the paper just like everybody else has. They know who they're comparing each other to and those kind of things. But to actually be Vladdy and go out there and say you're comparing yourself to Acuna Jr. You looked at Acuna Jr.'s stats.
His stats are insane. And it's his, you know, look, I threw a column up in Sportsnet.ca. His underlying stats are insane, too. You know, we're talking about 95th percentile in terms of, you know, all of these things. He is not just, when you look at his baseball reference page, Scotty Mack had a funny line this morning. He said, I'm looking at his baseball reference page, and there's a lot of bold-faced numbers there, which means he's the league leader in those categories, right?
Yeah.
A lot of bold-faced numbers there. But as Scotty said, if you dig under those other numbers, this is a guy who's cut his whiff rate in half. Like, you know, he we're so used to him being such a great player that you forget. You know, Kevin Seitzer told a story to Dave O'Brien of The Athletic in spring training, and Dave O'Brien said, you know, Acuna looks different. And Kevin Seitzer said, well, that's because we got him to flatten out his swing a little bit because we thought at the end of the year he was getting taken
Launch
advantage
angles.
Of. Exactly. Mm. So we've worked with him on getting his swing flattened out, and hopefully he carries it through the year. He is a better player now than he was last year when he was pretty damn good.
Yeah, He changes the game with all parts of his body. You look at the runs scored. He's got 24 runs scored in 23 games. He's got 29 hits. Yeah, you know, you always talk about good hitters, and I talk about the same thing all the time. Can he hit a fastball? Oh, he's got 8 homers. He's got 5 of them off the fastball. He's hitting over 400 on the fastball. Okay, oh, by the way, now all of a sudden, because of the way everybody attacks you with secondary pitches, breaking balls. Yeah, he's pretty good at that. On a curve and a slider, he's hitting 545. He's slugging 1,636 off of those two pitches.
I know.
And, oh, by the way, they slid their best hitter, which is Freddie Freeman, right behind him. Which, you know, the protection thing I'm not sure means a whole lot. But it does mean the fact of he's getting a ton more pitches on the plate. That's what that does is. Not going to attack you any differently. For me, I think Acuna Jr., you can't pitch him down. It's like Robbie Ray. You dig into Robbie Ray's stats. Acuna Jr. is 2-for-3 off him in his career with 2 big ones. 2 back leg cities. I went back and dug those stats up. Because you're going to have to figure out how to get him out, right? There's not every player's perfect. Right now, he's hitting basically everything. I went back and looked at the 2 home runs he gave up. In 2018, he gave up a fastball, 93 miles an hour, down and right down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
In 2019, he gave up a home run on a 3-1 curveball. Guess where it was at? Down and right down the middle. So the point being here is the stat that I just read about the slugging percentage against the curve and the slider. Robbie Ray likes the slider. Robbie Ray likes the curveball, the slow one. I've itsnayed that. I ain't throwing that to him, but I am going to throw him hard in. I've elevated my velocity on my fastball, so he hasn't seen that before, right? Now, instead of it being 92, 93, now it's 95, 96. And I'm going to throw that in, and if I miss in, I miss in off the plate, and I'm going to go changeups away. He's hitting about 333 on the changeup. He's not slugging a bunch off that. He's got his home runs are 3 off the slider and the curveball and 5 off the fastball. The changeup's the one. I think if you get him looking in, you can get him fanny out a little bit to hit that weaker thing. Now, maybe get a hit off it, but you're going to keep him in the yard. It's that thing. You just want to try and keep him off balance. Get him to using more of his hands, the fanny out, the hand out in front a little bit, and maybe he can roll over something. If he is getting a hit, he's getting the weak variety kind. He's an electric player. You could almost argue, Jeff, he's not only the best player in the National League, he's the best player in baseball. You could argue that. If somebody come up to you and said, I think Ronald Acuna Jr. is the best player in baseball, you couldn't argue that.
No. You immediately would throw out Mike Trout's name.
Of course.
But yeah.
Mookie Betts?
I think he might be a little, even a better player than Betts. I always feel like I underestimate Mike Trout because he doesn't play for a winning team. And I always have to pinch myself because I think we're naturally drawn to guys that we see more. And we certainly see more of Acuna Jr. We certainly see more of him in the East than we ever do Mike Trout. But also, you know, Mike Trout's not in the playoffs, you know. Mm-hmm. And that to me is a thing that still says a lot about how a guy is considered.
And don't forget where he plays. He plays in the National League East. He plays Miami, who has great young pitching. He plays the Mets, who have great pitching. He plays the Philadelphia Phillies, who has some really good starters. And he plays the Nationals, who has some really good starters. So to say that he has breaks when he's playing in division, mm-hmm. like Mike Trout occasionally can take a little day off and still go 1-for-4 with a bomb.
Yeah,
Acuna Jr. has to mechanically be sound a ton and thinking his way through at bats. I know he's going to talent his way through a lot of weeks during the season, but to be in the National League East, that's it's like Lindor. Lindor's moving over the National League East. It's no joke. The pitching he's facing on an everyday basis in the National League East is nothing better to sneeze at. So to add the talent and add what Acuna Jr. is facing on a every week basis and what he's doing to just velocity and spinning the baseball, it's just, and then he's not, what he's doing when he goes to the outfield and what he's doing when he's running the bases, it's second to none in my mind.
Another thing I want to mention too that Alex talked about, and it was a terrific insight. Obviously, we spend a lot of time talking about the defensive issues with Cavan and Bo and that left side of the infield. Alex made an interesting point. Alex Anthopoulos made an interesting point this morning. They had their own issues with Austin Riley and Dansby Swanson,
mm-hmm.
two guys who were really highly rated prospects, guys that everybody loved, and guys that there were some defensive concerns about. And Alex's point, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it struck me as probably something that you could apply at least in when it comes to Bo Bichette. He talked about, look, we sat down and looked at these guys and we tried to figure out, okay, why are they struggling? Is it one, they're young? Two, is there something inherently wrong mechanically? Do they just have are their arms not strong enough? Like something that you can't necessarily fix, right? You can't necessarily fix. So he said, if you remove that, then you start looking at the two players and you say, okay, is it realistic to expect that they can work their way into being better defensive players? Because what Alex was saying is, you don't want to waste time. Like if I can't throw to first base, you can hit me a gazillion grounders, and I still can't throw to first base.
Yep.
We talked about this with that. You know, I can't hit the curveball. You can't tell me to go out and play harder because I can't hit the curveball.
Yeah.
So his point is, if the makeup's there, unless it's just an absolutely killing physical impediment, you ride with the guy. And I guess that gets to me. We talked about this bow in his arm. I don't know if Bo's arm is strong enough to cover all the areas of the field you have to cover as a shortstop. But if he's willing to work on it somehow, and, you know, if there's something he is doing mechanically as opposed to simply a matter of arm strength, I'm sure this organization's figured it out. And it was just interesting hearing Alex say that. You got to ride with these guys sometimes.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with where your organization's at. Are you trying to win? If you're trying to win, can you, the other parts of other players making up for it, can you hide it a little bit and still win games and go where you want to go as an organization? What I got from listening to Alex is the speed of the game at the big league level is that much quicker than it is at the minor league level. And it takes certain people a little bit longer to get used to it. And you notice the balls that Bo has issues with. He's a little tardy on his backhand. He's a little timid on using one hand to catch the ball running in. What do I do when the ball's hit hard right at me? It's that thought process of, is it just I need rep after rep after rep, or is it just I need to duct tape my hand to the back of to my back and always work on using one hand to where I can line up my feet a little bit better, a little bit quicker, and the exchange from my glove to my throwing hand is a lot quicker, and then that makes up for the lack of arm strength. And you have to answer that as an organization. Are you okay with Bo and Kevin, the speed of the game? You're noticing that Kevin playing third base, that ball that went through his wickets with first and second in Tampa. The quickness of the game is the issue. Are you willing to let him work through it? That'll be the question.
We may have Tom Glavine. We are attempting to track down Tom Glavine, Hall of Fame pitcher and Atlanta TV analyst. We do not have Tom Glavine. Okay, well, we're going to take a break anyhow and take care of some business and come back, and we'll talk about it. We'll talk about the Atlanta Braves and their pitching. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, 7:37 is the first pitch tonight. Drew Smyly on the mound for the Atlanta Braves. Robbie Ray for the Toronto Blue Jays. The Braves and the Blue Jays. First of three games from Dunedin. Remember, a 7:37 first pitch. So adjust your watches accordingly. Put everything back. Blue Jays Central at 7. You understand how all this works. And the Jays will take on the Atlanta Braves. It'll be the Ronald Acuna / Vladimir Guerrero Jr. show. That's how I'm promoting it anyhow. That's what I hope we see. And Teoscar Hernandez will be in the lineup for the Blue Jays. Both Barker and I talked about this. Finally, the first time this year, unless somebody stubbed the toe yesterday, and who the hell knows, given the way injuries have occurred to the Blue Jays this year, I go on Charlie's Zoom call, and I figure if in the first 5 minutes I haven't found out that they put two guys in the IL, it's a good year. But anyhow, Teoscar Hernandez is back. He got a lefty, kind of a slop-tossing lefty on the mound tonight for the Braves, and Drew Smyly, I mean, giddy up. That right-handed lineup with Teoscar in it, this is the lineup you've waited all year to see. Other Blue Jays news. Our Ben Wagner reporting that Nate Pearson's sim game was so-so. Didn't get the impression, Kevin Barker, that, well, again, it was just Ben talking. It was Ben talking to sources. Didn't get the impression, though, that it was the type of thing that makes you think that you're raring to get him up at the major leagues.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I think until he shows the organization that he, again, and I've said this to you before and I'll continue to say it, until he can throw a fastball to a fastball hitter in a fastball count by that person, you're going to see the more valleys and you're going to see peaks. And that's one of the things. You know, the secondary pitches and working on extension and snapping them off and strike one, yada, yada, yada. Me against you. There's certain guys that are brought up that has size and just you know, it is mano-a-mano kind of thing. And as hard as he throws, you know, he's going to have to work himself back into being that guy. Plain and simple.
All right, I want to talk about Freddie Freeman. I find this, Freddie Freeman is one of the best hitters in the game.
Yeah.
It goes without saying. And he should be a perennial MVP candidate.
Yep.
So I find these stats intriguing. You know, people will tell you, well, it doesn't really matter where I hit in the lineup. And, you know, it's really only matters at in the first inning. After that, who the hell knows? You could be hitting first in an inning. You could be hitting eighth, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. But you got to explain this to me. You got to explain this to me. Okay, last year, Freddie Freeman hit out of the number two hole 26 times. He slashed .395, .1260. The Braves went 17-9 in those games and averaged 6.5 runs per game. That's pretty damn good.
He's a pretty good player.
The first 2 weeks of the season, he hit out of the number three spot. He hit .143 in 10 games, hit a .754 OPS. He didn't have a multi-hit game in that stretch. So, Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, decides, don't like that. April 13th, he moves him back to the number two spot. 320, 469, 560 in 14 games, a 1.029 OPS, 13 walks, 9 strikeouts. Mm. He is literally, Kevin, a different hitter in the number two spot than the number three spot. Can you explain that to me?
Well,
this is a guy. This is a guy who's he's a phenomenal hitter. He's everything you want in a hitter.
Yeah. Well, he's a great hitter. And first and foremost, if I'm Kevin Biggio, I'm running over to Freddie Freeman because Freddie Freeman's bat pass is about the same as Kevin Biggio. So I'm gonna run over to Freddie Freeman and go, hey, can you tell me how you either lay off the ball up or how do you hit it? How do you get on time to uppercut with your bent upper half and get barrel to baseball consistently? That's the first conversation I'm going to have if I'm Kevin Biggio. And maybe Freddie Freeman to give you some tips on how to do it. Secondly, the Braves are geniuses in doing this. You think the three-batter rule. You think they're going to bring a lefty in to face Acuna just to get to Freeman when Marcelo Zuna's hitting behind him? No. So what's that do? That leaves the righty in. Now the righty has to face Acuna, and he has to face Freddie Freeman, who Freddie Freeman would rather, I don't care who you ask, would rather face a right-handed pitcher than he would a left-handed pitcher because of who's hitting in front of him and who's hitting behind him. That's a couple of reasons. And early in games, I will say this. With the way Acuna Jr.'s playing and getting on base and stealing bases and is a threat, a lot of the times getting that guy out of the stretch earlier is easier to time that guy up. And also, that pitcher paying attention to Acuna at first may get me a ball on the plate a little bit more, maybe get me a hanger because you're not paying as much attention to me. So there's lots of reasons why that is. And which, again, the Braves just putting a guy in a position to maximize what he does best and also make everybody else around him. And, oh, by the way, help your team win a lot more games.
Yeah, and you made a good point, too, because Marcelo Zuna often gets overlooked, but he was hugely important to that team last year.
The run producer. And
he's a run producer, yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing is he is a guy that this organization has had their eye on for a couple of years. They didn't move on him, obviously, but there were a lot of people that thought he was going to be in the equation here for this team as a free agent if he had.
Yeah, why do you think Alex went out and got J.D., Josh Donaldson? To hit around Freddie Freeman. And when you heard Freddie Freeman talking, what do you think that he was saying all the time about what Josh brought to the lineup?
Mm-hmm.
He said obviously his talent and the way he could drive the baseball and change the game with crooked home runs. But he also said what it does late in games is it keeps that righty in to face me because of who's hitting behind me. I'm going to face a lot more righties when it matters than I am going to be facing that lefty because of that three-batter rule. It's perfect. It makes perfect sense. So you line a guy up to make not only that guy much better, just because you're keeping a guy in that may you can't if you're a manager, you're not gonna go and put in a lefty because of the three batter rule. Now that lefty has to face Ozuna or Josh Donaldson. So it makes ton of sense, and the Braves are good for a reason. But because they are smart the way they do things and they put their best players right up front. I just mentioned this. Why would you want somebody else getting one more at bat than you would Freddie Freeman? That's what I said. Why would you ever, when everything's said the way it's supposed to be said with the Jays lineup, why would you put Kevin Biggio in the top four in your lineup? You wouldn't, because that takes away an at-bat from somebody else that's better, that you would rather have one more at-bat in the game than you would see Kevin Biggio getting it. That's what the Braves are doing.
Yeah, it's going to be intriguing to see the top of that order. All right, you talked about Robbie Ray and small sample size against Ronald Acuna. Robbie Ray will start tonight. We have it's TBD as far as we know for the next two games. Hopefully, we'll have a better idea when Charlie talks today as to where the Blue Jays mm-hmm. will be going. I mean, they got it. They're getting into some really, really, this is a long road trip.
So you're saying,
a long, hard road
you're
trip.
Saying they couldn't get their lineup back soon enough.
Yeah, because they are going to have to be some creative. They got Atlanta, they got Oakland, I think it's Houston after that. They're going to have to be some creative to figure out how to get through these next 10 days.
Score a bunch of runs, it'll make it easier on Charlie and Petey.
Exactly. Robbie Ray. So what will be the key? You've already talked about Acuna. What will be the key for him tonight? Because now he's going Acuna, Freeman, and Ozuna. And those would seem to be three guys that could give him difficulty.
Yeah, well, he talks about a lot on his Zoom call the last time he made a start. He was talking about throwing strike one. You know, you put hitters on the defense when it's 0-1 instead of 1-0. He's a lot of a two-pitch guy. You know, the hard fastball, the all-or-nothing kind of thing, the max effort. He wants to go hard in when he is mechanically sound, which staying over the rubber, staying connected, not having the quick front hip where the ball goes up and away, non-competitive pitches. When he does throw his slider, throw it to people that he's supposed to throw it to. Read bats better. Kirk has to be really good. We've seen the last couple of times here about catchers not raising their hand and saying, I've read the bat enough to know. I know the game plan we were having coming into this thing, but there has to be a little bit of that. You know, you can't put all the pressure of game planning on the pitcher. Have the catcher go, okay, if he ain't hitting my heater and he's 6 days late on it, why am I flipping him a curveball? It has to be that kind of thing. Not so much on the same page as of Kirk got to be good at reading the bats. This lineup is good, and they're quick striking. That they got so many good hitters up front that you have a bloop and a bomb could get out of hand in a hurry with this lineup.
And there was,
yeah.
No, sorry. I was going to say I thought because Robbie Ray pitched in the National League, there may be a little more significant sample size with the Atlanta Braves, but there really isn't. The Braves combined have 38 at-bats against him, 12 hits, which is .374. Marcelo Zuna is 3-for-12. We mentioned Acuna's got two home runs. I mean, that's a really small sample size. But you made a really good point. You know, if you've been watching Robbie Ray pitch lately, he has been finding a little bit of joy up top in the strike zone. And if he and Alejandro Kirk can work that really early in the count, that could be a key against this lineup.
See, I think it has a lot to do with the competitive pitches. Competitive means it starts as a strike and ends up as a ball. It's out of the hand, not a ball. That means the more pitches you throw, the least innings amount of innings you're going to throw. Throw strike one and get after somebody. Have a little fun. Say, I'm pretty good out here. I can beat you. Go out there and do it.
I like that. Go out there and do it. I think that's appropriate. Mr. Barker, have a great weekend. We will be back on Monday. Don't go anywhere, though. Lots of baseball talk ahead. Jeff Passan joins us on Writer's Block. Stephen Brunt, Jennifer Botterill, and Richard Deitch. We will give you all the updates and the Blue Jays lineup and the developing Robbie Alomar story as well. Go anywhere.